few of you I know, even those from out in California and the West, Darrell, I find that 4.5 years makes a lot of difference. And you just don't know all the people that are there. And much of my time over the last few years has been spent in overseas things or on some other, not necessarily in your part of the country. Let me tell you what I'd like to do tonight. I have a topic that's been assigned to me on integrity, and I will follow that. But I thought what I would do, I understand there have been a couple who haven't. It's about 8 o'clock. All of us will leave here promptly at 9. But I thought I would go till about 8:40 on this topic. I could go on for an hour and a half because there's a lot of material. There are a lot of things that are in your handout. But I think what I'll do is at about that time, I think I'll wind it down. We can interact anywhere along the way, whatever you'd like to talk on regarding this topic. But after we get through, what I thought we would do is just open it up to some questions. You may want to ask about what's happening internationally. If I think it should be deferred till Donald's time with you, I'll just say ask Donald. He knows everything, and he does just about. He's got a phenomenal memory. But I think we'll go with that plan. Does that sound pretty good to you? Because that way we can kind of kill two birds with one stone. Darrell Sanders has a desperate need tonight, I heard. Your luggage didn't get here right, and so he needs someone that has a car may want to help him out. He really needs some deodorant. I don't care about the shaving, but you know, there are certain necessities that we have to have in the United States. Hey, let me get organized here, and we'll see what we can do. Okay, you've got a little handout there in front of you, and I'm going to try and follow that. There's some. How many of you have read the book Honesty, Morality, and Conscience? Can I just see your hands? Okay, a number of you have. Some of this is out of that book, or at least it relates to it. But I've done some other studies recently, and have been quite involved in trying to develop some of the ideas more basically, biblically. Rather than just do's and don'ts, because I think we need principles to operate by. A couple little stories that I thought were kind of interesting about how we demonstrate ethics was one story about a businessman. I think I might have included it in the book. A customer came in and he paid his bill with a $100 bill. And after the customer left, the businessman looked at the $100 bill and realized there were $200 bills stuck together. And he said, there came the ethical dilemma. Should I or should I not tell my partner? Now, it's got a little twist to it, but that's the way some people think about ethics. Or the old story about Mark Twain. He says one day, when he was a kid, he used to sneak around and steal watermelons from the cart, you know, in the middle of the street. And he said that one day he went around and grabbed one when the guy wasn't looking, and he ran around the corner and sank his teeth into the watermelon. He said, and then this funny feeling came over him. So he snuck back and put the watermelon back and got a ripe one. Now, you expect other things. But you know, it's interesting that honesty is not a laughing matter. It's been very interesting to me that ethics has had such a high profile in this year with Gary Hart and Joe Biden and Douglas Ginsburg, and you go right down the list. But you wonder if it's really ethics or if it's just being caught. And if you have read this series of articles, as I've looked over many of them that have appeared over the last few months, you wonder really, well, there are a lot of people, by the way, now who are making revelations about their past so that they won't get caught, somehow clearing the way. But is it really integrity? Is it really ethics? Do they really believe in morality? Or is it just simply that they're afraid of being found out? There's some very interesting statistics out and about regarding the Christian community. One of the statistics was recently uncovered by Josh McDowell. He has been doing some extensive surveys for his Why Wait program, and has been interviewing Christian kids. And he has discovered that the number of Christian guys and gals who are sexually experienced is about the same as in the non-Christian community outside of marriage. You'd think it'd be better, wouldn't it? And in fact, I may not be able to remember this one exactly, but there was another survey done recently about where the main influences come from in people's lives. With non-Christians, it was their peers, and then their parents, and then society. With Christians, it was their peers, society, and then parents. Now you've got to ask, what is happening? Something is turning in our society, and we need to be aware of it. Many of you, of course, are aware of the great baseball player, Ted Williams. And when he was 40 years old and he was closing out his career with the Boston Red Sox, he was suffering from a pinched nerve in his neck. And he said, "It was so bad that I couldn't even turn my head to look at the pitcher." And that year, it was 1959, it was not going to be his last year in the major leagues or in baseball, even though that was the first time in his career he batted under 300, batting 254, which is 10 home runs. But at that point, he was the highest salaried player in baseball, getting $125,000 a year. Piddly, right? The next year, the Boston Red Sox sent him the same contract. And when he got it, he said, "I sent it back with a note. I told them I would not sign it unless they would give me the full pay cut allowed, and that was 25%. Says his feeling was that the Red Sox have always treated him fairly, and he didn't deserve what they were offering him now, and he cut his own pay by $31,250. Doesn't ring with what's happening today, does it? Different things are happening. Something is changing in the way of ethics. There's a change in society. There's a change in what people in general think about ethical behavior and about integrity. Have you ever read that book, Up the Organization, by Robert Townsend? Anybody seen that one? Rather interesting book. It is a rather blatant, success-oriented, ambition-oriented thing. And in that book, he says, if you see someone else cheating at the job, just keep your nose out of it. It's none of your business, because that's their business and you don't pay any attention. He said it a little bit more colorfully than that. Another book that I think is worth your looking at, and I'm just giving you a little background, and I want to make this very informal tonight rather than just precisely to follow my notes. Paul Stanley just gave me a copy of it, and it's very interesting, called The Postponed Generation. Now, it doesn't deal specifically with ethics, but it does have the societal influence on students and on people of the age that many of you are working with. You know better than I, you're getting a different student into the university today. Susan Litwin, L-I-T-T-W-I-N, if my memory serves me correctly. Susan Litwin. It's a secular book, and I've forgotten the publisher. The Postponed Generation. Another article done, I think it was in Esquire magazine, not that I get it, but I looked it up, by Gail Sheehy, she was the author, one of the authors, and it's all this midlife stuff that went on a number of years ago, and it was called The Postponing Generation, or Men in the Postponing Generation, something like that. What I'm trying to point out is that there is something different going on in society today. And even Christians are being influenced deeply by the thinking. Now, I'm not going to talk tonight so much about how you change the secular society. I think that's a very difficult thing to do. Or secular people. Or necessarily how you witness. I think that your main task in dealing with this topic of integrity is to face it head on with the people that you're working with. And they are going to have some basis on which to make decisions. It's interesting that no one becomes a liar, a thief, or a cheat in one sudden, momentous decision, but rather in a series of rather innocuous and minor choices, they make the big decisions very easy. And so we dig our grave ethically and morally when we do that. It's not with one of those big ditch diggers. It's with a little teaspoon, one little pile of dirt at a time. It's all the little compromises along the road that cause us problems. And so that's for that reason, I think our navigator heritage of dealing with small issues in one's life will uncover big issues later on. And folks, if we do not confront character, we will end up with a generation of a nav bunch who are very smart, perhaps even very deep in the word, but having no character base. It'll affect marriages, it'll affect families, it'll affect the way we think about life, and it'll deeply affect our mission worldwide. So, with that, I would like to just say that every decision counts, and to ask, can I be fully honest, or can anyone be fully honest in the dealings that I have in my business or my life? How many of us are tempted to twist the facts? Aren't you? To embellish them? To not quite say what's true? To give an impression? It's all within us. You know, we're all a Jacob at heart. I just finished reading Genesis today in my reading program, and when I look at the life of Jacob, a liar, a thief, a schemer, and I'll tell you, there's a Jacob in all of us. And our conscience doesn't always cause us to pay attention like we really ought to. Now let me share with you what I believe the goal is in all of this business, and I'll see if we can see this. I don't know whether you can you see that okay? Okay, what we want to do is we have a basic goal to become a man or woman of integrity, to have a good conscience, and to have a witness with the world. So when I think of integrity and honesty, that's the ultimate goal. It isn't just to be in, have an integrity, but we want to also have a good conscience, and we want to have a witness to the world. Acts 24:16, I think, is a key passage. That herein do I strive to always have a conscience void of offense toward God and men. And in 2 Corinthians, when Paul was delivering this gift, he says, taking precaution that no one should discredit us in the administration of this generous gift. For we have regard for what is honest, not only in the sight of God, but also in the sight of men. I think it's 2 Corinthians 8, 20 and 21. Okay, let's go into a little bit of the scripture. If you just look at your outline, let me tell you where I'm going because I may not get there. Okay? And we'll just see where we get. And I'm happy to interrupt and talk, do whatever you'd like to do through the process of this evening. First, I would like to go through a little study that I've done on what I call three unshakable principles for ethical living. Now, this is not in the Honesty and Morality book because I've done it in recent, sometime over the last year or so. I forget just exactly when I did it. But I got to wrestling with this issue again, and I felt that we were giving too many do's and don'ts, or I was giving too many do's and don'ts, not going underneath to what is the fundamental basis of every decision that we make in life. Then I'll go into some issues on the definition of truth, and then we'll try and deal with what I call five commands of business ethics. Is that following your outline? I got a slightly different one in my hand because I made that one up sort of for you from another outline. And then to deal with some typical problems and some how to confront dishonesty and how to make ethical decisions. The last part follows more closely some things that are in the book, Honesty, Morality, and Conscience, so I don't mind leaving that to you a little bit. But this first part, I need to lay the foundation for you. Okay, first of all, let's take your Bibles, please, and turn to Genesis 12. Genesis chapter 12. Okay, in Genesis 12, verses 1 through 4, you find the story of Abraham, and you all know it well, so I won't read it in detail, but the Lord said to Abram, "Go forth from your country, from your relatives, and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You will be a blessing. I will bless you," etc. So that is the call to Abraham, and he left his homeland. Then in chapter 13, verses 8 through 13, is the incident of Abraham, or Abram as he was still called then, and Lot. They got into a conflict. And so Abram says, "Let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we're brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If to the left, then I'll go to the right, and if to the right, I'll go to the left." Now, what did Abraham do there? Did he have to do that? Why not? Right, he was the oldest, he was the patriarch, he was the key man. But he said, "Lot, you choose, and I'll take what's left." And then, of course, if you look at Hebrews 11:8, you find out that by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out in a place which he should afterwards receive for inheritance, he went out. Not what? Not knowing what? Where he was going. He didn't know. Okay, so the first principle is the rule of faith. Now, I would like to propose to you that every ethical decision that a person makes has to be based on faith. Hard to one to come to grips with. And I've only given one example. But the proposal is this. When you do what is right, you have no guarantee that it will turn out for your short-term good. You may get fired. You may get lower grade, or your people may get lower grades. They may not get a promotion. They may end up in conflict. But see, the faith is that I do it knowing what is right, and I trust God to bring good from the decision. So that's the first principle. Now, by the way, I had a friend here at Colorado Springs, one of the businessmen with whom I'm working. He was helping a guy get out of a terrible financial situation. This guy's a sharp businessman. And he's a guy who's a salesman. He knows what he can do and what he can't. And he went with this guy back somewhere back east to a bank that held all the notes. And he said they had a choice. They could have just put honey and cream and sugar all over it and made it look great, or tell it like it really is. Now, this guy that he was helping was a non-Christian at that time. He said, "Listen, I will help you, but I have one rule. We tell it like it is." So they went to this banker and just laid it out with all its gory blood on what the real situation was financially, and took a great risk because they usually expect you to cover up. But God blessed. God blessed, and they kept the guy going on his loans. You take a chance, but they had no guarantee. Now, Exodus 20 is the Ten Commandments. Now, the first four commandments deals with the relationship with God. The next three deals with the next six are really personally oriented. The first three dealing with honoring your parents, not murdering, and not committing adultery. They're basic moral issues. And the last three deal with business. Don't steal, don't bear false witness, and don't covet your neighbor's house, etc. Now, I would like to propose to you that the second rule is that we live by the rule of the moral law. And you can do some more studying on this. The moral law has not been superseded. Now, the only one possibility that has been altered is the law of the Sabbath. There's still the Sabbath principle, but not necessarily the Sabbath law. But the other nine of the Ten Commandments have been still upheld. They are still as valid as they were back then, and they apply to us today. And of course, see, what I'm doing is I'm going on an ethical basis, pre-law, law, and New Testament. And I'm going to set down three principles that come out of that study. So the proposal I make is that whatever ethical decisions you make must be in keeping with the moral law. Okay? Then, if you look at in the New Testament, for instance, in Matthew 5, 38 through 40, it says, "You have heard it said that an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist to him who is evil, but whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn it to him again. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. And whoever shall force you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. You have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, in order that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven." Then Matthew 7:12 is what we call the golden rule. "Therefore, whatever you want others to do for you, do so for them, for this is the law and the prophets." And the same in Luke 6:31. The proposal that I would make here is that the third rule, which is the New Testament rule, is the law of love. In other words, you act out of love. You may be able to sue. You may be able to do something that's wrong. You may be permitted. But on the law of love, you may choose not to. So, the proposal that I will make for what underlies every ethical decision, without going into any details, if you will take yourself or a student or a serviceman or someone you're dealing with who's wrestling with ethical things, you ask the question, does it reflect faith? Can you make the decision based on faith? That is, that you depend on God for the result, if it's right. Secondly, does it violate the moral law? And thirdly, does it violate the law of love? Now, I've put a couple notes in here, not so much for you. Well, it is for you, but mainly to apply to others because I think you've done this. But the application of these three principles is not mechanical. But rather, I believe it depends on a broken spirit before God. And the illustration I would use there at some extent, and I have some notes, but I won't go into them, is on Jacob. Jacob was a liar, a thief, and a schemer. And until he met God and was broken by God, God did not use him. And so I think that we need to have that experience of being broken by God. So even when you're dealing with someone on ethical issues, on integrity, remember that most fundamentally you're looking for a broken and contrite heart, which will ultimately provide the basis for their character. And the third thing that I mentioned, that the only source for living an ethical life is power from Jesus Christ himself. So, in summary on that, faith, the moral law, the law of love, as expressed in the Sermon on the Mount and the Golden Rule. Those are the three things that I believe are foundational to every ethical situation. The reason, see, they will cover things over which there is no rule, and you can make a decision on that basis. Now, you may want to ask something about that a little later. Okay, let's go on for just a moment. Let's talk about truth, because integrity and honesty certainly is related in some fashion to the concept of truth. All right, now what is truth? Okay, let's look at what the definition of truth is. There are several ways to look at truth. First of all, there's what we call scientific truth. That is, you can put it in a test tube, you can test it, you can work with it, and you can examine it according to a set of laws and principles. The second kind of truth is legal truth. It is truth that goes according to a set of statutes. And the third is what I call verbal truth. That is, I am telling the truth. The kind of truth that one would say in a courtroom, for instance, which is different than legal truth. Legal truth is by a set of documents. It may not really be true, but that's what people call truth. Now, in the Christian realm, we look at a different set of three things. First, there is doctrinal truth. That is truth about our belief in God. And there are several references we could give in that regard. The second is the truth of Jesus Christ. I am the truth. I am the way, the truth, and the life. He identifies himself as truth. And the third is the truth of the Bible. Thy word is truth. So this is just a way of looking at truth. Now, what are some various categories of integrity that we would want to consider? Well, let me just propose some of these to you. I think when we talk about integrity, we're talking about lying, cheating, and stealing. That's the honor code out at the Air Force Academy and at West Point. I will not lie, cheat, or steal, nor tolerate those who do. They can't enforce it. They've tried, but they can't. The only way you can enforce something like that on a non-Christian community is by law. So therefore, you have a severe punishment for violating ethical things. In fact, it guarantees not in one whit that that person will live according to those principles later. And as a result, I've watched over a period of, I came to the Air Force Academy 24 years ago. And over that period of time, as the society has changed, they've had to change the way they handled honor violations. The reason is, you can't develop honor if it has not been built in earlier by some other principles. But they have not admitted that yet. Then we have the issue of misrepresentation, the issue of sexual immorality, liberty. There's a sense of integrity in what liberties you take. Now, I'm not going into that much this evening, but in one other study that I did, we went into some study on liberty. What can I do? What can't I do? Even when I can do it, do I do it? See, it's not just an issue of law. It's an issue of integrity. By the way, any mathematicians here? Okay, what is an integral? The summing of the whole. See, it's a summing up. To be in integrity means wholeness, completeness, that you are what you say to be. That isn't the way to say it. You are what you say you are. There is something fundamental in you. Now, see, liberty deals with that. It's a reflection of what is inside. And then the issues of the mind. One can be dishonest in the mind and honest externally. Now, you could go into a lot of those and try and wrestle with them. But let's go on for just a moment. And let me give you what I consider to be the five commands for business ethics. I'm going to narrow it down to business ethics, because as the rubber meets the road in life, this is where most people have to face it. Okay, first of all, another definition of ethics. To the government, ethics can be nothing more than law. Now, they've got an ethical code they're trying to get through. They've tried to put it to practice in Congress. It doesn't work at all. It doesn't work at all, because it can only be backed up by law. That if the punishment is strong enough, then you can keep people to keep an ethical code. In the military, they have a thing called the Straight Arrow Program. Any of you heard of that? That is, anybody who's dealing with a contractor, they can take nothing. They can't take a pencil. They cannot have... If a military person goes to Boeing Aircraft Company, he cannot allow them to pay for his lunch. Nothing. And it's really, really strong. Then to a philosopher, ethics is not much more than a concept. They talk about it. To religious people, it has largely to do with morality. But I believe with God that ethics is obedience. It's what you do. Now, I believe there are five basic commands in business ethics that you find throughout the Scripture. Now, I'm sure there are more. But let me share with you out properly what you said you would. And the idea of having a weight that looks alike, but, you know, is hollowed out a little on the inside, you know that story, or the thumb on the scale or something like that. And so we need to give a just weight. The second thing, in Romans 12:17 and Ephesians 4:25, I believe it has to do with total honesty. Now, that's tough in sales. That is really tough in sales. How honest should I be? I'm selling a used car. What do you say about it? You know, do you tell everything that you know to be wrong? And I remember giving a seminar on this with a group of business people, and this one guy was so upset. He said, well, how can you say that? And he gave me the Latin term, which some of you may know, but it meant buyer beware. What does someone know that Latin? What was it? Okay, well, not caveat emptor. Okay, so it's buyer beware. It's his responsibility. It's not mine. And we had quite a discussion on that thing. I mean, because, you know, if you're in sales, you don't tell what's bad. And I can give you some illustrations just where out of conscience. I remember selling my old 72 or 62 Volkswagen, I guess it was. I kept it for about 70 years, it seemed like. And told them all the stuff that was wrong with it. Because I knew everything that was wrong with it. Thought I was crazy. And then the law of serving in Matthew 20:28, that anywhere in business and work, the real purpose is to serve people. Whether you serve your employer, you serve your customer, you serve other people. And whenever it goes for a Christian to other than the law of serving, then I believe we're going to cross the ethical lines. Personal responsibility, James 1:14, let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. Each man when he is tempted is drawn and carried away by his own lusts. Isn't it easy to say, well, they told me to do it, or the company says I've got to do this, or everybody else is doing it, rather than to say, this is my personal responsibility. Doesn't matter what anybody else does. That even if everybody else does it and I do not have freedom and peace from God in my conscience to do it, then I ought not to do it. Now, gang, even among Christians, we need to be very careful in this area that we do not force others to adopt our standards, either restrictive or non-restrictive, because we don't want people to violate their conscience. Now, we could get into a big discussion on conscience, but we want to be sure that we are not influencing people improperly in that area, because everybody has to take personal responsibility. And then this is a tough one. And I'm not looking up all these passages because I believe you can do it, but it's reasonable profit and reasonable wages. What is a reasonable profit? How many of you know what the general margin is in a grocery business? About 1%, 1-3, maybe. Okay? They have loss leaders, don't they? Okay, so we shop around and we find out a thing that we can buy actually below their cost. And then we find some other items in the store that the profit margin is 300%. How do you view that? Okay, now, do you view it in terms of reasonable profit as looking at the business as a total or on each individual item? Now, every customer, of course, has the right to shop and buy, but I'm talking about it, you own the store. Do you see what I'm talking about? That you can't just say reasonable profit from one item. And you might say, well, Jerry, what's a reasonable profit? And I've talked to business people about that, and I don't think anyone can give a bottom line number, you know, 6%, 8%, 12%, whatever it may be. But I believe every business person must wrestle with the issue of the combination of what the market will bear versus what is reasonable profit. This is something to wrestle with. Okay, so those are the five, and we can come back to these things, but I think I'd like to just sort of press ahead and then we can come back and talk about some things. Okay, let's talk about some typical problems, and I'll give you a few illustrations on these. One of those is obeying the law. I imagine there are a couple of people here that have gone over the speed limit. And then there are some, if you've ever worked for the government, is what is ethical may not be legal, what is legal may not be ethical. You have to wrestle with that, especially when it comes to a whole stack of government regulations. But the law is there for the good of mankind. Okay, you can say a law is unjust and choose to violate the law. Now, some in the pro-life movement do that, don't they? Okay, now, here is the guideline. If you choose to violate a law that you consider to be unjust, that is, you must live with the consequences of whatever the consequences are of that law. It says we are to obey the laws. Now, I think a lot of us get down into the details of whether we're 2 miles over the speed limit or whether we made a full stop. And I think to a large extent, that's more piddly stuff. I'm talking about deeper issues that we run into in terms of the way we conduct our lives. I think those are factors. And if you are always fudging everything you do, it's going to have, you know, it's going to build up and have an impact on you. But we have to deal with what laws should be obeyed. In general, most of them. But again, I say what is legal may not be ethical, and what is ethical may not necessarily be legal. Then we have the issue of misrepresentation. And I've got a great illustration on that here. What time is it? No, I don't. I'm not going to give my illustration. But it's just that we can twist things just a little bit. Then the idea of compromise and condoning dishonesty. How do you overlook someone else's dishonesty in a work situation? I realize, how many of you are working at a secular job also? Can I see your hand? A number of you are. And you're dealing with people who are and will be. I remember one time that out at the academy, we had a situation where during one of the summer training sessions, a faculty officer found a cadet with alcohol in his tent. It's illegal. And so he chewed this kid out with great language, up one side and down the other, said, I'm not going to turn you in, but don't you ever do that again. He was being kind. He condoned it, in a sense. That fall, when regular classes had begun, the kid was caught with alcohol in his room. So what did he say? Well, Major so-and-so let me get away with it this summer. Within 24 hours, Major so-and-so was being shipped out of the Air Force Academy, lost his job, and ruined his career. Just like that. See, often the world knows how to handle condoning dishonesty better than we do. That helped me on the issue of confronting dishonesty. I remember I went up to answer a want ad one time, and I went to this house, and I was still teaching at the academy, and I walked in, and here were four guys out there playing cards in the family room, and so I talked to the parent that was there, and he found out I taught at the Air Force Academy. He said, "Oh, hey, listen, my son goes there. He's a freshman this year. In fact, he's in there. He's not supposed to be. He comes down every Saturday, but he sneaks away." And he went on like this, and I said, "You idiot, don't you realize that I have a responsibility?" So I got out of there as quickly as I could, but I knew the kid's name. I knew that he was what we called OTF, over the fence, instead of AWOL. And I wrestled with what I should do. I hate to turn anybody in. Then I remembered that major. That helped. I called his air officer commanding. I said, "Listen, I hate to tell you this, but you got a guy that's OTF. Turned out, this kid was just a freshman. He was the kid that was going to be the commander while all the upperclassmen were gone. Top kid. And, of course, he got nailed. But I thought, if here, this early in his career, he's already violating the issues, what will he do when he's an officer? And so I had to confront and not allow it to be the dishonesty to be condoned. Now, on confronting dishonesty, I have a whole slide on it, and I won't go into it now. But when you do it, you confront it carefully with the facts, with prayer, knowing that you might be wrong, knowing that you may not have all of the information, but being sure that you have nothing personally to gain by it. That's just some of the ideas, and you can pick up some of the others. What about obeying your employer? I believe that you need to follow your convictions. This is related to this business of whether or not you take personal responsibility. But employers ask people to do a lot of things, and you must follow your conscience. Regulations. Regulations are not law, whether they're Boeing's or McDonnell Douglas's or the Air Force's or whatever. And most regulations, by the time they get in place, have dealt with a problem that was way back there. That doesn't mean you don't obey them, but what I mean is you have to use your head. For instance, I remember some guys called me one time, some fellows who had been in my ministry, and they were in the Air Force and training in the missile silos. They were supposed to go through some computer-oriented exercises, and they were to log their time. Well, there was an exercise, and it was a three-hour exercise. They finished in an hour, but the guy said, "You still logged 3 hours." And they got in a real conscience thing. I said, "Why don't you call and find out what the intent is of that regulation?" Well, the intent was that they had to schedule the computer. Didn't matter how fast you did it, but you couldn't overschedule the thing, and they had to show that the computer was not so much occupied, but scheduled. So it was a very simple thing. But see, here was a regulation that they thought they were violating, that they really weren't violating the spirit of the regulation. So use common sense in a lot of these situations. The little things. Work time, stolen time. There's something like every employee wastes an average of 2 hours a week at least. I've got that statistic written down somewhere. And then the whole issue of politics, power, and friendships. We need to watch it very, very carefully that we don't misuse the influence that we might have. Let me just go through this last little section, and then we'll just open it to some questions. How do you make ethical decisions? First of all, you get the facts. You search the scriptures to see if the scriptures speak on it. The moral law, the law of faith, the law of love is one area, but it may speak specifically. Just following Exodus 20 is a whole list of do's and don'ts. Exodus 21 to 23. But often the Bible is silent on a number of issues. Then you have to go to some other things. Examine your personal life. If your own walk with God is not right, you won't be able to make a good ethical decision. Know the accepted standards in your profession. Now, that doesn't mean you do it, say, "Oh, this is accepted. We lie all the time." I don't mean that. But there are standards of ways that things are done. A plumber goes out and he has a standard fee for a certain operation. Well, you can do that against the hour if you want to, but sometimes he finishes it quicker and sometimes it takes him four times as long if it's a standard fee. See, it's the way they decide to operate. Then listen to your conscience. Make sure you've made your conscience tender before God. Pray about it. Then seek counsel. It is my preference not to seek counsel with just any old Christian or even a godly Christian, but to try and seek counsel with someone who is in your same profession, who has faced these things and walks with God, because they have lived with their decisions. And that's the best way to do it, because you come to me about some situation you're in, and I can give you some guidelines, but see, advice is cheap. I can only tell you what I think about it, but I have never lived in your shoes or in where you are. So get counsel from someone who is competent in that area. And then finally, to step out on faith. Find your decision ultimately will be a decision of stepping out on the basis of faith. Well, I think I'm going to stop right there, and let's take first to see if there are a few questions. It's already 8:45. And maybe you have some just questions on this basic outline that I've given you. I've given you a lot more. This is basically a 50-minute, I would make this about a 50 or 60-minute interaction on this topic. But I feel you can put a lot of the pieces together on that. But you may have some questions. Yes. Yes. Okay, I didn't say it was nullified as it was nullified as such by Christ. See, if Christ, what comes from the Old Testament has to be either replaced or reaffirmed by Christ. And so in the way he treated the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And he did several things that broke down first the way they had applied the Sabbath, which made it an extremely legalistic thing. But the Sabbath principle, I believe, is still there. The principle of rest and so forth. Now, some come from a different theological viewpoint that would extend that. I personally would view it that the things from the Old Testament, like the law of the sacrificial law, it was replaced by Christ's sacrifice. The dietary laws were nullified. Not that they were good, but they were nullified. And so forth. But the moral law, except for the one issue on the Sabbath, which Christ modified, I believe they are still in force. They don't get you salvation, you understand. The moral law was given in your relationship with God and men in acting out your faith. Does that help a little? Okay. Yes. Let me see what it was. Oh yeah, I'll give it if I can find it here. I need a note because it's I want to give it very accurately. Well, yeah, I want to make sure it's accurate because it's using somebody else's name, and I know I slipped it in my folder this afternoon. If you want some good information on this, U.S. News and World Report, February 23rd, had a whole article on a nation of liars. And it's really an interesting development. Patience with me just a moment, folks. Pardon me? February 23rd, 87. The illustration was one on Walter Cronkite, and I can't seem to lay my hand on it here. I apologize. I'm sorry, I don't have it. I can give the gist of it was simply that Walter Cronkite, when he was very young, I'll try and give it to you from memory, he went down to the drugstore and he didn't have enough money to buy his watch. And so he worked out a deal with the corner druggist that he could pay him bit by bit. Well, his mother found out about it, and she grabbed that watch, and she marched it right back down, paid for it, and then put it away. And she went back and says, Walter, I know it's not dishonest, but you have no idea where that money is going to come from. And he says, it looks like it's gray to me, and when there's gray, it may become grime. He said, I remembered that all my life. And he said, one time, some developers came from Florida or somewhere came and said they'd like to give him this piece of property. So they never asked me to make any announcement about it or say anything on it. They just wanted to say that Walter Cronkite owned property in this area. He says he turned it down. He says he remembered his mother's admonition. If it's a little bit gray, it might be grime. That's a pretty good summary of it. I don't think he's a Christian, but he's a very moral man. In other words, he would not cross over into those gray areas. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I just came from working for a company where they had the lion's share of business in their field, and very, very clearly the policy of the company was, what is the fair price? The fair price is what the market will bear.
Yeah.
Depends
on the product, and it depends on the length of time that they'll have the lion's share. For instance, in certain areas of the software business and computer business, you'll have a corner on the market for probably no more than a few months. And so if you're going to survive, you will need to see, you have to look over the long term on the profitability of the whole. And at some point, one has to determine what is a reasonable profit in that regard. Every industry, I believe, you have to look at somewhat differently and look at it from a Christian viewpoint. As a general statement, I would not say that a fair price or a just price is what the market will bear. Because in times of depression, in times of hardship, that may be just gouging people. And just because they're, you know, it happens all the time. You have a tornado that goes through an area, and so that little water bottles, you know, that they have for extra water because water is impure, which costs 89 cents, and the store now sells for $4.50. Is that just? See? It isn't really, because it's not serving the customer. But I think each decision, each one has to be made on its own. I want to bring, my purpose in bringing it up was so that you will think through what is a reasonable profit. By the way, on the other hand, you want to pay a reasonable wage. Not just what you can get them for. You know, what is just on the part of someone with a family, et cetera, et cetera? I think there are a lot of factors involved. Also has to do with whether the business can survive. No business survives if it doesn't make money. Yes. Okay, what is your position? Do you have any responsibility for them?
Yeah.
Okay, remember now where I... Okay, where I was, I had a responsibility. Okay, my task is not to make the non-Christian world toe the mark in terms of all of the policies, rules, and regulations. And so I would probably, in that case, not be the one to do it. I wouldn't just say it's not my responsibility. Now, if there were some other issues, some other moral issues that I saw going on, I'd probably blow the whistle. And I just put my daughter in a place where there's suites of men, women, you know, like that, here yesterday. I think I'll call there and check tonight what's going on. But... Well, there could be things going on there that I'd sure blow the whistle on if I were a visitor.
So you're saying just affecting the individual, and you're not responsible for the
unpaid. Right. See, now if you were the RA, or if you were on the faculty, or if you had some position, then you have a responsibility in that regard. Now everybody has to make a judgment on that. I'm just telling you what I can see a lot of things. Now in a business, there's a little different responsibility. A fellow employee has a responsibility to the business related to dishonesty within the system. Is my feeling on it. Yeah.
Also the question of accepted practice. There might be a rule in the book that was written 20 years ago that has well known around the room, but everybody may violate that and the administration may not be doing anything about it.
Yeah. Right. Now, see, I never try to have a non-Christian live by my moral standards in the slightest, because that is not the issue. Now, when they affect other people adversely, drugs is one issue, for instance, that I would be, you know, reasonably tough on if I knew what was going on and so forth, because it has a deep effect on other people. Or if I saw someone, if they were using that alcohol and then driving, see, because then they're endangering other people. Okay, a couple more on this, and then yes, ma'am. Okay, section two. Tell me what that was. Pardon me? Oh, I was just saying. I was giving an illustration there that there are really two views of truth. One set of truth is the way the world defines it, but see, God has a different set of truth. And then I went on with the definition of ethics, showing that truth to God is and ethics to God is primarily obedience to what he says. The world looks at it in one way, but we as Christians look at it in another, is what I'm saying. We have a different standard. The non-Christian has no standard of the Scriptures or doctrine or Christ. And so I was just showing the different views of truth. It may be extraneous. It may not. Oh, let's see. I'll have to look it up and see where I was on that. I may be... Oh, yes. Oh, that was the lying, cheat, various kinds of violations of truth are lying, cheating, stealing, misrepresentation, liberty, and mind. Okay? One more, and then let's switch for a minute.
I was interested in what your thoughts on the use of the black market overseas.
Okay, the black market overseas, it's very interesting. We've had to deal with that many, many, many times. And as a tourist going in, I do not use it. Because I go in and I don't want to endanger someone else or whatever. I remember talking with a Brazilian woman recently, and I asked her about that. She said, oh, it's not the black market, it's the parallel market. And that's really true in most places. Some of our staff in Ghana a number of years ago really wrestled with this issue, and they just paid a horrendous price for things, some of them, by not using the black market. Okay, this is the issue where you come into the law. Is the law just? I can name other countries, and I don't think I will name them here, but I would counsel each missionary to examine themselves as to what goes on normally on money exchange. And that's where the black market usually is, by the way, in the money exchanges, because it's usually a vastly different rate between the official rate and the unofficial rate. Almost 99% of what goes on the unofficial rate in most places. If it's very close, I wouldn't even worry about it. But some places, it's 2 and 3 times different. And I would say most of our people have chosen to operate with that parallel market because it is what is going on. So the question is, what is right in the use of those funds? I would never make the decision. We do not have a policy, and I would never make the decision for any individual, because see, they're the ones that have to live with the consequence. It could also be said in the same way of going back behind into some countries, under what auspices one goes in. Okay, let's just kind of we'll take one more, and then we'll just sort of switch gears here a little bit and. The what now? You mean they're in a country doing one thing and it appears they're doing another? Right. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's going back and this thing being recorded, so I won't use the names, but. We regularly go in. Okay, first of all, in all of the things that we do that I'm aware of, we do not use illegal means. Nobody goes in under an assumed name. They're going in under their own passports. The various businesses and so forth that they're using sometimes are kind of thin, but it is there and it's reality. And they take a risk. We do not smuggle things in. You know, in general, I'm sure guys have taken a Bible or two through at times. And they go in and they will violate, like there may be a law in a country you can't meet in small groups. They will violate that. Because that comes under the law that God has given for freedom of being able to worship, it seems to me. In fact, it's interesting. Most of those countries would supposedly have that kind of law, but they enforce it differently. And so they take a risk Okay, let's say there is that law. It comes under the section that I said, when you decide not to keep that law, then you must live with the consequences if you are caught. You certainly are not violating God's law and sharing Christ and so forth. I mean, that's the classic thing. Peter says, you know, whether it's right in the sight of God or men to keep speaking, that we choose to obey God rather than men and suffer the consequences. And that's what they're doing.